When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napzok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report. I'm really looking forward every time to the different little news report song. Yeah. Soon it's going to be like A Day in the Life by Beatles in News Dudes.
Clones on the way. It's more full on the hill. Clone Wars Report.
Clone Wars Report. Good. We're into the groove now. It is the second episode of the season 7, the second episode of the Bad Batch arc. Still in that weird place where I'm sure some viewers are like, this is brand new. Hooray. And other people are like, here is the exact difference from the animatic that I've watched a thousand times. So I'm looking forward to getting to arcs that are not as based on the animatics and discovering new and exciting things. But we are going to talk about episode 2, season 7 of the Clone Wars, A Distant Echo.
Oh, I love that title.
It is. It's a good one, right?
Title,
it's literal. And yet, ellipsis, there's more. So I always like to discuss just our actual visceral experience. Did you stay up late on Thursday night into Friday morning, refreshing Disney Plus, or did you make a different choice?
I made an interesting choice. I forgot that there was an episode, and that does not mean anything about my joy for the show. As I said, even to you off air, I'm really enjoying the first two episodes of Clone Wars. So glad it's back. I forgot.
Yeah.
And it was midday Friday when I was like, oh, yeah.
Hey, Clone Wars.
And that actually, I liked it that a little better than the stress of the previous week, refreshing till one in the morning.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Is for you, is the, obviously you have a lot of different things going on.
Sure, yeah.
Is it that, or is it more like because Mandalorian was brand new in live action that this doesn't feel like as much of an event, or?
I think you might be right. And that's a very subconscious thing. Yeah, I think it is because it's Clone Wars. As much as I love it, as much as we've remarked on how fun it is to watch this as a community now.
Yeah.
Versus we were all alone in our rooms or doing catch-ups or rewatches and stuff along the way. Yeah, Mando's just like, you feel like you can't miss it. And I think, too, excuse me, I had a 7-Eleven lunch on the way over here. I'm choking on it.
Those hot dogs.
Last week it was pain. This week it's hot dog. No. I think, too, what you said up top is important because I'm not super familiar with the line, but I did watch it. I did watch a lot of the videos back in the day on these lost episodes. So I think once we're something new, I'm not going to want to miss that.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for myself, I just made the choice that, man, I love doing the late night, but I had a hell of a week. And I was like, I can watch this bleary and sleepy.
Right.
And, you know, then get up on Friday and do all the other work. Cause like, or I could just wait until my wife and I are both awake and watch it on Saturday morning, like an actual Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
My wife had been sleepy when we watched the first episode. So it was great. We got up, on Saturday. We had some pastries.
Nice. Nice.
We had, watched the Bad Batch and then watched A Distant Echo, and it was great. It was great to watch it bright-eyed and bushy-tailed with pastries.
We're fortunate that we agree with each other on how to present this show and to not rush out and Friday morning meet at a park near between our apartments and houses and record a show and get it out into the world. The fact that we're also, as a Force Center brand, are like, hey, pump the brakes, take some time, watch it a couple times, helps me too, because then I feel less pressure to, I look like Echo. My eyes are like,
twitching, processing data.
Yeah,
and it is really, really great to be able to dive deep into it with Force Center and with the community, but also preserve that bit of the first viewing is just as a fan.
Yeah.
And then kind of dive into like, what do I want to share on the podcast? What are my thoughts? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now we are to that level of viewing, which is great that we get to do. So let's dive in. What was your overall reaction to this episode?
I had a lot of fun with this one. I think last week's, it's hard even for me to separate. I mean, it's designed to be, you know, smooth connection between episodes here. It should feel like one story. I'm not going to rank the episodes. I think last week I liked a little bit more the action. This one seemed at times smaller, but I liked the punch in this one. The emotional punch.
The emotional punch.
Bigger.
Yeah.
The stuff with Rex and Echo and everything. And then the little moment with Padme. And knowing, well, I guess I had missed some of the Filoni stuff saying that Padme wasn't going to be as involved in the season.
Yeah, I didn't see that quote until recently either.
And that kind of, it's heartbreaking. It sounds like it's heartbreaking for Filoni in some way, even though he might control some of the decision making beyond that. So I really cherished what I got.
Yeah, which I think obviously to see it ripple across social media, all the reactions and discussions, we'll definitely spend some quality time on that amazing scene. But for my overall reaction, I really loved last week's episode. It set up the stakes for Rex really well. But other than that, it felt like, let's meet the Bad Batch, which I enjoyed meeting the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
I would go to their party. but this episode really hit me. It really affected me. It really blew me away. Partially because I feel like so much of the episode is Anakin looking in a mirror without fully realizing he's looking in a mirror.
Yeah.
And we'll get into some of the thematic stuff that I was excited about. But they're just big picture. There was so much of seeing him being introspective, being the Jedi that he could have been, seeing that he knows all these lessons that he's going to break, and he can, these good ideas of take a deep breath, talk it out first, be there for your friends, don't let your attachments blind you.
Yeah.
He knows all these things, and he's such a kind Jedi, and Rex being the mirror to him, and he's so kind and sensitive to Padme, and there's even the possibility of reaching out to Obi-Wan. This was one of those episodes that delivers on the promise of seeing Anakin is that good man, that good Jedi Knight, and just heightens the tragedy.
Shmi would be proud of the glimpses we get into Anakin here.
Exactly. There's some moments where you could see Shmi going, good, keep going in that direction, kid.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, the Force Center statement here. Well, I'm sure we're going to get into it. I'm sure we're going to talk about it later. Put a pin in it. But Anakin not fully seeing his own reflection and seeing and the attachment stuff also, for me, works where later on, if you want to go into his mind while he's in the events of Revenge of the Sith, you can look at some of these attachments and go, well, no, this is good. This is good. And confusing it and being confused and under stress, under pressure, Palpatine in one ear, Mace chastising you in another. To me, now it just even more realistic that he's like, no, some of these attachments are good.
yeah, right? It gets him nice and confused. And you can get into his head in Revenge of the Sith where you feel like, well, of course he's torn and confused.
Yeah.
And doesn't know who to listen to out of all of these various angels and devils on his shoulder.
If you were to do a supercut of those angels and devils, you would definitely include a lot from this episode in that how he got there montage.
Yeah. You know? How did he get there? So that was one overall reaction. The other thing that I wanted to throw out is I think I responded to this episode because it was just such a great grab bag of different ingredients of Star Wars that really resonate with me and ingredients that I like from this particular era of Star Wars.
Like, gotcha.
So that scene between Anakin and Padme had that just kind of sweeping star-crossed lovers romance. Just even their delivery, the tenderness of the I love yous back and forth was like, that's capital R romance. And the episode was really funny with the Wrecker being afraid of heights and the comedy they played this important scene with that, how much Rex and Obi-Wan know about their relationship, but they still played it with like this great sense of comedy.
Yeah.
And then there's this sense of real fantasy when we're going to this misty planet and they're basically like dragon riders with a less advanced civilization that Anakin's trying to communicate with. That's so just capital F fantasy, you know, dragon riders. And then there's just like a lot of great action and cool stuff in the design. Like Wat Tambor's Art Deco Frankenstein Metropolis, you know, palace with the lightning and, you know, beautiful brass fixtures. And like there are all of these elements that Lucas has mashed together at different times, but in particular in the era of Clone Wars, that was just like, this feels so Star Wars to me because it's got all of these elements.
It's so unique to this era, which is a celebration of George's original visions. Everything you're saying, it's great. I'll echo that. I'll be in Vegas this weekend, everybody, doing comedy. You're right, like the Obi-Wan Rex moment is so like deep in terms of the story, and did they know you can start twiddling your fingers, but it also just played as a rom-com.
It really did with the bunk banging on the
Wrecker with the classic I'm a big tough guy, but here's a little human weakness, which just makes him just endearing to me. That even when I'm afraid of heights, I just don't like being high up.
I just got an issue with gravity.
You're right. All the elements and Wat Tambor we're definitely going to talk about, but you know, for prequelists, but also someone who, you know, both of us kind of, even when we had less a joy for the prequels at different points in our life, Wat Tambor was that like, there's like a droid frog guy.
A droid frog who speaks with an AM radio dial. Yeah.
And so to see him as kind of an actualized kind of, you know, and we've seen him before, but to see him just in focus here in 2020 is great for me.
Yeah,
so I'm echoing everything you're saying.
Excellent. A clear echo rather than a distant echo. So the way we're dividing up the Clone Wars report is this first half, we're kind of diving into big picture stuff. And then in our second half, we'll drill into little details. So going big picture, I want to talk, as we often do on Force Center, about themes. So for me, what we were talking about, this central Lucas Star Wars theme about attachment and questioning, is it a strength or a weakness, really felt at play very specifically to Anakin and his journey, but just kind of in general. Like we had Rex's personal need to save Echo because he was, you know, and even getting to that point with that conversation with Anakin after Rex has a fight with Crosshair of just, I used to be able to let go and just say, my brothers die in war. It's war. It's terrible. But I move on. With this one, I can't. It's personal.
I love that moment. Glad you brought it up top, because it just fuels into the theme, flows into it beautifully, but also just as a moment, just to have Rex as a character, Rex moving beyond what the programming, literally the programming was in this particular arc, in this particular moment, because of that connection to Echo and how that attachment is a real growth point for him. I'm not going to be just nameless war machine, you know, it's this culmination of this 6-7 season growth from fighting machine to no, man, like that's my guy.
Yeah. And even to the point, I hadn't thought about it until we're talking that in mid conversation, he takes his helmet off.
Yeah.
Like that's a good Star Wars, you know, mechanization versus human organic. Yeah, this is the way. He'd be in trouble if he was a Mandalorian or a specific kind of Mandalorian. I'm sure answers are coming. yes. And I like that Anakin, even though he has this great attachment to Rex, he is getting to see from the outside that danger of attachment. Like, I don't think Anakin thinks for a second it's bad that Rex cares about Echo or shouldn't care about Echo. I'm sure Anakin super relates to that. But from the outside, the fact that he can see, it's great that you care and we should rescue him, but I'm afraid you're going to hurt yourself and others. I'm afraid you're going to act in a rash way. I'm afraid you're going to cross lines that you shouldn't. I'm afraid you're going to get yourself hurt.
Yeah.
And the fact that Anakin, that is what Anakin is so concerned about for Rex.
Yeah.
And that Padme helps him through that, which is yet another level of his attachment. You know, obviously the Jedi see this level of attachment to Padme as a threat, and Palpatine successfully manipulates it. But us as the viewer get to see this moment where Padme gets to help Anakin through his own attachment to Rex and see it as a strength.
Yeah. Going back to even Anakin looking at Rex here, I'll kick it back to you here. How much do you, and this is kind of our headcanon interpretation of some of these scenes, how much do you see Anakin, that old thing where you sometimes the best advice you give is what you know you don't listen to yourself? You know, is he looking at Rex going like, this is not good. This is not good because I do it too. And to me, it just fuels. I keep using the word fuel today. I'm hungry or something.
It's the hot dogs.
It's the hot dogs. It just kind of builds on their connection too. Number one, but I just again, I'm really looking at this case study of Anakin, particularly in this episode. Is if you can go back to hearing him going like, "Wait, is this what I do? Don't do it, Rex."
I feel like Padme gets through to him about that in a sort of like, in a good way. Like, like, so Padme is saying, it almost feels to me like Anakin, and this is a roundabout way to answer your question.
That
Anakin has while he cares about Rex, he's kind of taken him for granted. And Padme saying, every time that you run off half-cocked and do something really dangerous, where is Rex?
Yeah.
And right beside me, supporting me. It's kind of a positive view of attachment of he always has your back, so why don't you go have his back? So there's this positive side to it. But then when Anakin, to your question, when Anakin is really faced with it of, I'm standing here watching my friend maybe not making good judgments about his own safety and the safety of the mission because he's blinded. It feels like Anakin gets that. Oh, I do that too. Padme straight up told me that, and I get that. But it seems like his way to respond to that is just be like, oh, yeah, I know how to do this the proper Jedi way. And you see that reflected through the episode where he's like, don't fire on these Poltecs.
Yeah.
The civilians of the population of that planet, don't fire on them. We need to find a way to communicate. We're going to talk this out. You know, he seems to just retreat back to, no, I can do everything Obi-Wan ever taught me. I can be a good Jedi. But it doesn't seem to get that to that level of, I realize how big of a threat that is.
Yeah, I think it's right. Yeah.
You know, to me, I guess in real world terms, it feels like when somebody holds the mirror up, and you're like, okay, I see that, mm-hmm. but I can only cope with addressing it in myself up to a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes, that's kind of where I was thinking of just like, we, you know, it's like I always say, sometimes I get really mad at my parents for something they do, and I'm like, oh, because I do it. yeah, yeah. Again, and it ties in that Padme moment that I'm thinking, there's a great Clem Snide song where the lyric is, I'll be your mirror, I'll reflect who you are, and what a romantic kind of notion that can be, and a tough one and a true one. And this was absolutely one of the best relationship moments between them.
Yeah.
From Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith, Attack of the Clones. It read the most real.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And I think Padme, you know, from Attack of the Clones, obviously we understand that she has concerns about the sort of structural, societal consequences of a secret marriage. And she's a politician, and he's a Jedi, and there are rules on both sides, blah, blah, blah. But in the big picture, it feels like Padme's like, hey, I get the Jedi in a lot of ways, but this attachment thing seems over the top. She seems like as somebody who's like, caring for others is good.
Right.
Anakin, it's great that you care about Rex. And by the way, do you see how much he cares about you?
Right.
Go care for him in his time of need. Feels like what she is saying in terms of being maybe like an angel on his shoulder about what attachment is.
Yeah.
Rather than being cold about it.
I like that. I like that. The also play on the little morality lesson at the beginning, which I'm paraphrasing. I didn't write down. What is it? The
search for truth begins with belief.
So, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, a lot of flat earthers believe in that themselves, but just that Rex, you know, Rex needed the belief in him back.
Needed that belief
from Anakin. To go pursuit that. You can take it a lot of different ways. I like that. And I think a lot of it, I think this Padme scene was definitely the emotional center of this episode. Big win there.
Yeah, yeah. And just great animation, even from Anakin. He's like, I guess I do that.
And also, I'll say carefully, also a lesson to all of us, and I think we didn't necessarily do this, but when this clip came out, this is the clip that came out, and the world freaked out. And we thought maybe, oh, this will be after Revenge of the Sith. Not so much.
Yeah, I mean,
not so much. Always, as we always say, keep an open mind, you know, speculate responsibly, all those catchphrases and T-shirts here. But another lesson in this weird time of just like, hey, some information's going to come out. You don't know the context.
You don't know all of the answers. Yeah, we got that Mace quote. Mm-hmm. Who knows? That's going to be like a vision that Anakin has. Right. I mean, not going to go past Revenge of the Sith, but we'll see. We will see.
We'll see.
Time and possibly animatics will tell.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on attachment? We'll spend a little bit more time in the second half on that Padme scene and in the Obi-Wan of it all. But any other thoughts on kind of that big theme of attachment?
No, I think well said. And I love having some room to kind of wonder in your characters and your big characters. That's always fun for me in Star Wars.
Yeah. In terms of, I guess my last thought on it is in terms of the Lucas and Padawan Dave Filoni, in terms of their perspective, remembering that the entire Skywalker saga is these back and forth ideas about attachment and that I don't think it's ever saying attachment is just bad. You get a great reminder of that when Rex actually gets to Echo and Echo's like, you came for me.
Yeah.
And it's right. It doesn't feel like a criticism at all. It doesn't feel like Rex should have accepted that.
Right.
Echo was a Borg now and and left it at that. No, it seemed like a celebration of attachment and caring about your friends. The other theme that jumped out to me is a little bit, I think it's in a lot of Star Wars storytelling, but there were some moments that felt like really on the nose of the whole from a certain point of view. Mm-hmm. That reminder that everybody's actions are dictated by the way they are looking at things. Mm. We obviously Anakin seeing himself in Rex.
Right.
And realizing, oh, that's what I do. And oh, that and Rex always supports me. I'll support him. But then I was really struck by the Poltecs, the natives, and the clones trying to understand one another.
Yeah.
One, we got the softer, gentler Anakin who didn't just threaten them, which in some Clone Wars arcs, if he was angry or if Padme was in danger or R2 was in danger, the lightsaber just would have been out. She would have been yelling, right? But it feels like he was really taking a step back and saying, we can't hurt them. We need to try to talk to them.
Yeah.
And then in particular, just it seemed like such a visual actual representation of from a certain point of view to have Tech doing the translation where literally on one side of his face is his perspective, the clone's perspective, on the other side is the Poltec's perspective. And by simply talking and translating and telling one another where they're coming from, the Poltecs are like, we don't want a big war here. We don't want to bring your war here. We just have a fallen friend we're trying to rescue because those guys are a-holes. And the Poltecs are like, you're right. Wat Tambor is an a-hole. We will help you this far and no farther. And to make that even more like on the nose, you get the that great shot of the Poltec kind of looking directly at Tech's goggles, trying to see what's what. And you're seeing that from Tech's literal point of view, it's the Poltec trying to see Tech's point of view from Tech's point of view.
Beautiful, beautiful description of that scene. I wish I had the Alex Damon Arabesh skills. I don't. I was trying to translate myself as fast as I could. Yeah, no. What a great just. It's like the C-3PO Ewok memorial scene here. We got here just kind of like, let me translate what's going on. We'll all be great. I liked Anakin in this particular moment. Playing things a little differently, playing things maybe as he could, going back to your statement up at the top of the show of just like, this is the little boy who helps. It's still there.
This is the little boy that helps.
And you can trace it all the way to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And seeing him be around the Bad Batch, like their first instinct is to shoot. Is that, you know, having an impact on him as well? Like, oh, that's why Obi-Wan is always telling me to take a breath.
And just a small note, I really like Clone Wars has given us so many far off civilizations and cultures that are different and, you know, outside the norm in Star Wars, like you said, fantasy. This was one of my little favorite designs.
Absolutely. They had a great design. The audio of them, their voice was really great, you know, because a lot of times we have in Clone Wars, we do get like, this species has a Scottish brogue.
Right. Which I sometimes push against. I really sometimes it takes me out of it for a little moment, all three, even in Rebels. But yeah, this one worked. I thought it was kind of a funny moment where there's like, yeah, we took your leader. That's what we did.
Yeah, it's a good strategy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And then the other kind of from a certain point of view thing is just this reminder that the only way that the Separatists, the Techno Union, and the droids and that could strategize against the clones effectively is to understand the clones via a clone, to literally use the mind of a clone to understand the tactics of other clones.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart Wat Tambor.
Smart and smart, cruel Wat Tambor.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the from a certain point of view kind of theme?
No, that was beautiful. Beautifully stated about just the center of it there. And Tech, very G.I. Joe-like now at this point. He's very G.I. Joe. He's got a working goggle system, translator system on that. We're going to get more into the Echo stuff. That's some of my favorite parts of the show. So
Nice. You brought this up already, the moral of the episode. The search for truth begins with belief. For me, that this is one that's very literal to the episode. Rex believes that Echo is alive. You know, he believes in that he heard that voice, that humanity, that is not a recording, that is not an algorithm, that is my friend. So it makes sense for the actual episode. It's an actual just moral, something for 12-year-olds and much older than 12-year-olds to absorb. Does it ring true with you?
The seeking out truth.
The search for truth begins with belief. So specifically that idea of I have faith, and my faith will lead me to hard facts that will validate my faith.
Yeah, I yes. And again, I made the flat earther joke. Don't at me if you're a flat earther. I'm just like, you know, go seek your truth too. But yeah, no, actually, if you don't want to talk just personal journeys, even not even just from a spiritual side, but just you have to be kind of open up to that. If Rex had been like, yeah, you're right, there ends your journey, even if you go on it. And so I think to break that down in just a simple Star Wars morality, but yeah, absolutely. Change, you know, if you believe you need to change and there's some truth in that, that begins with you going, yes, I believe I need to change. Or it begins going back to the Anakin thing with someone believing in you that you need to change. There's a lot there. So I think this episode could be pretty inspiring. And the Rex Echo stuff we'll talk about again. But seeing Rex in the spotlight and what that meant was pretty powerful.
Yeah. The search for truth begins with belief. At first, I was like, I'm not sure about that, because it can go into weird.
It can go into weird. Jokes aside, like, it can go. No,
But it can be that. Yes, like, hey, I have. I'm super immune to a disease, so I'm going to go sneeze on the salad bar.
Right.
That's my belief. The search for truth leads me to, you know, anyway, we're saying the same thing there. But I think that is a misinterpretation. I think when I turn around, it feels more about like hope.
Yeah, totally.
And what came to my mind, I've told you this story before, but when I was a kid back in the day and 83, I can't remember how long, but before Return of the Jedi came out. Mm. And we had started seeing commercials, my brother and I, for the Return of the Jedi action figures.
Yeah.
And at the time, we lived in St. Cloud, which is a smaller town at the time, an hour outside of the big city, Minneapolis.
Right.
And my mom and I were going to drive into Minneapolis. And I was like, ask my brother, if I see the Return of the Jedi action figures, which one do you want? And he was like, it's too early. They're not going to be out. You're not going to find them. You know, but like, I had the belief in the search for truth, and I got Jedi Knight Luke, and he got a Gamorrean guard.
Just reward. You are Rex looking for your figures of Echo.
I think that idea of just like, if you have any faith or hope that there is the possibility for more truth, more discovery.
Yeah.
If you can't shut yourself off from trying to find that truth. Or that Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker action figure at Sears.
Absolutely. First step begins with you.
Exactly. So we've also been talking about the action, because Clone Wars really does prioritize making sure that there's some juicy action scenes into every episode. So did you have a favorite action moment or two?
I did. It's a very tiny moment, and it's when they're in the base, they're looking for Echo, and they're all kind of going into different rooms and going on the hallways. That's it. The reason that's my favorite action moment is, even at my job in the late 90s, when I'm walking around patrolling empty corridors at 3 in the morning, I'm trying to stay awake, or if I'm walking down a corridor to my old radio station, I would just pretend I'm a stormtrooper in my brain. Stormtrooper, clone trooper, same thing. Where, you know, you're like, who has a ducked behind a corridor with a flashlight as a blaster, pretending to be fun. So it's those little tiny little Star Wars moments of, yep, that's what I used to do as a kid, or that's what I used to do as an adult, functional adult, doing a cover me. Or when I did the 3D thing at the Void at the Glendale Galleria, where you're shooting stormtroopers, and it's me and Riley and Whitworth and Harloff. I don't know about them. I was so in it.
Yeah,
I was biting my tongue, which is when you know I'm serious, and I'm hiding around corridors. It's corridors. So there was that little moment. I was like, oh, I like it. I get it.
Oh, yeah.
You check that door. 3, 2, 1, break. Let's do it.
You like corridor action. You got a lot of corridor action. For me, it's stretching the definition of action a little bit, but I loved Wrecker using the Gonk droid as a weight. On the ship on the way there.
Can we talk about that? Oh my God. Yeah. I totally forgot.
It's so funny. So good. It happened and I shouted out, Wrecker is pumping Gonk.
So I love that moment. I love Gonk droids. I was recently doing a stream on Battlefront 2 and I was playing with the Ewok and I used the Gonk droid as a shield.
For cover? Yeah.
And someone got mad at me, not real bad, but someone in the chat was like, no, don't do it. You can't do this. Gonk. I'm like, he served his purpose. No. So specifically that moment. And this is looking back at myself, reflecting on myself. I love that moment. It was so funny. And I thought to myself, if that had been in The Mandalorian, I would have done 10 minutes on the podcast on how I don't like it.
Really? Because it seemed too cartoony? But it seems at home in an actual cartoon?
Yes. It's as simple as that. And that's not necessarily, I'm not saying I'm right here. I'm just saying I literally had that thought first time I watched it. Like, that was pretty funny. Oh, God, I would have hated it if it was in, like, episode 6 of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
With Clancy Brown's character, the devil character, just being like, I could lift up a droid. I'd be like, turn that off. That's not Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, this was extra cartoony because he was just he had a chicken leg in the other hand.
It was Hanna-Barbera level.
Yeah, yip-tip leg in the other hand. It really was. It had a real Leroy Jenkins vibe.
Yeah. Wrecker is Leroy Jenkins.
He is the Leroy Jenkins of the Bad Batch. So I like that. There's the cool, weird move that Anakin does with his elbow. I think it must have been like a force elbow push, because otherwise I think he would have broke his elbow on the droid.
We had the same thought.
So that was nice. But then the other one I'll throw out there is when Wrecker goes charging out after, again, Anakin being a little bit more calm, saying this is a stealth mission, let's not attack anything. And Wrecker, losing his mind, shooting and throwing the droids, and the droids go flying out of the hangar, and one of them goes, why?
Yes.
That was beautiful. A droid screaming, why? Poor, poor thing. And with that, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back to dig into details of A Distant Echo.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we are back to dive into the details of A Distant Echo. So we're kind of walk through this in order and talk about the juicy parts. So we've got the Anakin contacting Padme scene, which might be the juiciest part of this episode for a lot of people. So I want to dive into a couple different aspects of it. How did you feel, interpret Padme's pregnancy? Because a lot of people saw this clip in the trailer and thought it was disruptive of canon that it was obvious that Padme was pregnant, that Anakin for some reason didn't look down.
Yeah.
How did you take it once you saw it in the actual flow of the episode?
I took it. It's so funny. I took it exactly as that. And I enjoyed that. And I thought it was very realistic. And I thought there was an indication of where Anakin's mind always is, where he's in the middle of the Outer Rim sieges again. So that's great to see that reference. Yeah, it's very clear. I mean, that's what she's doing. But if you're doing Bump Watch 2020 in the Clone Wars, she's not showing necessarily.
No.
And I can completely understand. So you're dealing with attachments. I completely understand Padme just going to wait for the right time.
Yeah, that this is not the time.
And I think sometimes if you allow yourself as Star Wars fans to just play around with it as if these are real people, creatures, and droids you're watching, then it reads very realistic to me.
Yeah,
Look where he is. His head's all over the place. He's also worried about, you know, his buddy's going to knock on the door. And she's just kind of... It's a bad joke, but it's just kind of like you didn't even notice I cut my hair kind of situation. Like I see it as that. That's why I thought this scene played just very realistic in terms of them as a couple.
Yeah. It felt to me like, hey, I don't think she is meant to be that visibly pregnant that it is,
right.
Absurd that Anakin didn't notice.
I really focused on it the third time this morning when I watched it. I was like, am I missing something? Nope.
She's
not showing.
Nope. And I think that hand is just to remind us that she knows.
Yeah.
And this is not the time to tell him. I think you can even headcanon it of like, they clearly have times for calls.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin is clearly late on some of them because this is kind of a desperate affair, mm-hmm. obviously, to have his quick phone call, call with her, his FaceTime. And it's fun to even imagine. It's like, is this the time?
Yeah.
That he'll be in the right mood. He'll have enough time. And then she sees that, oh, he's really upset and I got to be there for him. And he's not even admitting first when he's like, oh, it's Obi-Wan's going to be here any second.
Yeah.
And she even is like, no, there's something more.
And
it seems to me that obvious that it is not the time.
And I'll even go down this path a little bit of even if you want to take it somewhat negatively, in story, not necessarily as a fan, but just like also that Anakin is not super in tune with her right now. That might lead to stuff down the line where he's not super present in some of the parts of the relationship. You know, he's looking for the bigger picture and the attachment. Everything kind of sets in. Again, his mind opens up. I sometimes like these moments of, hey, that kind of sucks. He didn't notice his wife's pregnant. Yeah, it does. That's part of the problem, you know, that's part of the situation. So I think there's a motive. Most of it's what you're describing, the sweetness and her being very in tune with herself. Also knows husband can kind of get a little emotional and a little crazy at times out there.
And this is a big thing,
this
right?
This thing, and we got 5 seconds. Oh, and he's also got a problem.
And also, like, is he gonna, if she tells him while he's in these Outer Rim sieges that he's already not being patient or reasonable about, is he gonna rush home?
Yeah.
And that seems to me that reminder of like, you are doing your duty. You're helping the Republic.
Yeah.
These sieges are important. And my voice is needed in the Senate. Also seems like a little like, we'll deal with this when we absolutely have to, when the time is right. I loved it. Cause I said it on our podcast, making the Outer Rim sieges a part of the story was really important to me because it's such a big moment of her saying, you're gone so long, there's whispers that you died. And that was such a great joke. It's like, these sieges are taking longer than I thought. And it's like, that's what a siege is. That's why it's not a battle or a conflict or an incident.
Status Baratheon would tell you this. I had one of those
Padme was like that. This is the Webster's Dictionary. Anyway, sorry.
Sorry about that. I had one of the smiling for Scrimshaw moments where I'm like, hey, there it is.
Yay, the Outer Rim happened.
That weirdo singing and the Outer Rim sieges are going on.
Bring me those sieges. Yeah. And just that he thought he could bring them to a quick resolution. And she says that in a loving way. I recently rewatched in season 6 the Scipio arc with Rush Clovis, where Anakin gets so violent and it even gets to the point where Padme's like, we just can't see each other for a while, and then he rescues her when she's in, you know, dire danger, and Scipio and sees that she sees that he tries to rescue Rush and Clovis, and like lots of other things have probably happened, but that's one of the last big moments we've seen between Anakin and Padme. So a little bit of Anakin's like, I really lost it. I went really too far.
Yeah.
And it hurt Padme. A little bit of his like, I miss you. I love you. I'm listening. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be a good Jedi.
Yeah.
Is interesting to connect to his absolute swing toward the dark side in that Scipio arc in season 6.
That's great. Yeah. The fact that is the last time, that would make even more sense. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the last time we've seen, but I'm sure, there's lots of storytelling to fill in. But just knowing that relatively recently, there was a big swing in a bad direction.
Yeah, and again, to wrap up even my final thoughts, I just like there's a lot of great things to the scene. There's a lot of troubling things if you're watching them and rooting for these crazy kids in love here. There's a lot of things can go to this and circle back to this scene in the Star Wars story.
Yeah.
Both mistakes, a lot of them on Anakin's part, and just her silently suffering at times, knowing what's good, little traces with Leia, like Leia's always going to do what's probably better for the team and put it above herself, unfortunately, sometimes. So, a lot there.
But you really, to me, I really felt the love.
Oh yeah,
the attraction, and we fell into this, and we might die, so why not? Not anything, but just love, actual love, which is really, really great to see.
Totally agree.
Let's talk about Obi-Wan.
Oh yes,
the great comedy tension of I noticed in particular when Rex is guarding the door, other people walking by, he's nervous. There's a sound of like a big clanking walker, and Rex is looking alarmed, and then you cut to it, and it's Obi-Wan casually walking up, and I realized that is great sound design to up the tension by hearing the chung, 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 and like, no, it's just Obi-Wan's going to interrupt holocall.
Maybe Obi-Wan's making those sounds, practicing his crack dragon crawls and walker sounds.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So the big line that had the Star Wars internet abuzz, I hope you at least told Padme to say hello.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
So I'll take it to a very real world part. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. We can psychoanalyze myself later. I've been in three big secret relationships that were workplace-based. I don't know why it keeps happening, but it happens three times. And you never are as secret as you think. And there's along the way people who are like, okay, I'm just going to tell you I know, or the people who play along that they don't know, and then they drop little clues. I can't time and time again, including during my days at Collider. So I just had a personal connection to that moment. Not even worried about the Star Wars ramifications or the deeper moments. I just was like, yep, been there, been in a secret holo call in a barracks with my friends outside. So I like that from there. In terms of in-story, he's not dumb.
Yeah. He's not dumb. In that Scipio arc is the time where Obi-Wan sits down in Anakin's room with the awesome pod racing posters and is like, it's normal to have these feelings. You know, I had those feelings for Satine, and Anakin kind of doesn't want to talk about it. So he's opening the door.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was something that was fun about this because we spend so much time with Star Wars fans discussing it as the great tragedy of Anakin, the fall of Anakin, what if Obi-Wan? It was just a strange breath of fresh air to see Anakin's desperation, comic rom-com desperation to hide it, and Obi-Wan to be like, dude, what do you think you're hiding?
Yeah.
So there's like the comedy of it, which is a breath of fresh air. Very and a little bit of a kind of zinger from sassy Kenobi that we get in Clone Wars so often.
Yeah.
But then the actual tragedy of it, that Obi-Wan absolutely knows that there's a connection. He absolutely knows that Anakin feels greatly for Padme, that Padme seems to absolutely reciprocate those feelings. But I think not realizing, they're married.
Yeah.
And that there's this depth of commitment that Anakin has taken more steps down that path than Obi-Wan is aware of.
That's I really like that. Again, to jump over quickly, real world, I'd already been a couple months into a relationship and someone pulled me aside at an event and was like, hey, man, I think I see where you're going. And just, and I was like, we're already dating. again, real world, but jokes aside, I like what you're saying there of just Obi-Wan like, he's already down that path, not knowing how far he's gone, which leads again to some of the tragedy that's coming. And if he And Anakin had just been able to talk about it. If Anakin could have gotten over his inability to talk about it, which, again, is tied to the Jedi Order, why wouldn't you? Attachment is forbid. We know this. So, of course, I'm not going to tell Brother Anakin because they'll take – or Brother Obi-Wan, they'll take away my cloak or whatever.
Yeah.
If they it's, again, a little crack in the Jedi Order.
Yeah.
Not just between them, but just – if they had been able to communicate and he could – Anakin could be more open –
right, and just sit down and say, what do you want to do about this?
Yeah.
Do you want to leave the order? Do you want to end this relationship, step back from this relationship? Do you want to try to talk to the council? But then, yeah, there's this great tragedy because we know, the council's not going to be cool with it. They're not going to have an understanding discussion and run through the options and hear different sides. They're just going to be like, you effed up, Chosen One.
Yeah.
Right? They're just going to be on him.
Mace is not going to. Mace is going to say some really weird thing. Like, have you laid with her? Like, whoa. Have you broken your vows?
Yeah.
Get out of here. Yeah.
You cannot hide your feelings or the images. Oh, my.
Yeah. Like, but no. But
not going to be a fun conversation.
So it's not just this. The internet didn't. The internet's definitely interested in this moment. The internet is a capital T and I. But I think there should be a lot of positivity connected to this moment in terms of Star Wars story.
Yeah, and in some ways, it's fun and shocking. I think because it's this breath of fresh air in the way it's told, but it also lines up perfectly with Revenge of the Sith when Obi-Wan's just like, Anakin's the father, isn't he? I'm so sorry. You know.
Yeah,
that's not a discovery made during Revenge of the Sith.
And again. Connecting those strings, what you said earlier, for him to, in that moment or along the way, Obi-Wan comes to that and it's just even in his own head like, oh, it's farther along than I thought.
It's farther along than I thought.
This is not good.
Yeah.
I should have done something back then.
Yeah.
When I was on Skago Minor or whatever.
Yeah. I could have pushed harder.
Yeah.
I also like in that moment, there's a little bit of, I don't know the actual title of the track, but there's a little bit of Padme and Anakin's love theme. From the prequels that kind of makes it in there.
Across the universe,
right? Yeah.
I'm horrible at Star Wars. It's the sun song. Twin suns, binary sunset. Yeah, the sun song.
The force theme, yeah. it's the one where they're angry. What? Anyway, and then just, I do enjoy, I don't think it's actually on purpose. Maybe it is. Who knows? Filoni has a sense of humor about these kind of things. I like that in that shot with the, I hope you at least said hello to Padme for me. That Obi-Wan has the high ground, literally, that he is standing higher on the platform looking down on Anakin.
I did not notice that one. One for you, sir. That's a good one.
Always on the high ground watch, as many of us are. So we were talking about the council.
High ground watch. We need a logo for that. High ground watch 2020.
Who has the high ground? Who has the high ground? There's this great shadow of the council, and Obi-Wan coming is a member of the council to deliver their opinion.
Right.
Anakin's all calm about it. Like, I'm sure the council is going to say yes. And Rex is all like raring to go and like, well, then let's just go now.
Yeah.
But then Obi-Wan actually does show up and seems to want to tell Anakin that either the council straight up doesn't approve or has a bunch of conditions. Mm-hmm. And Anakin just interrupts him. He's like, great. Glad we got the council's permission. Bye.
Yeah.
What did you make of that dynamic?
Perfect dynamic. Also a little bit of, hey, Obi-Wan, remember when you rushed off to try to save Satine? So don't don't cast some stones. Perfect example of, I don't want to cast aspersions at the council again, but some of the mistakes they make along the way. And Anakin is always going to snap judgment, rush on in there, of course. But we're talking about, a clone life at stake here or the stake of the battle, everything. There's a lot of things there. So, Kiadi Mundi and all them up there twiddling their thumbs, I'd be mad too.
Yeah.
And again, more proof for Anakin down the line to be like, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. Anakin thinking, they don't know.
Yeah. It felt like just Anakin and Obi-Wan having almost like, not Obi-Wan because he just kind of gets interrupted in size, but Anakin just having a little bit of the like, we could have this long conversation, but I'm going to go. I'm just going to. Kind of plausible deniability. Yeah. I heard, go ahead. All right. And right. I think it is also like where we've definitely seen Anakin do that in a dangerous way before.
Yeah.
This is totally coming off of Padme basically saying, Rex needs you. And Rex has always been there for you. trust your gut, go help your friend. And that there's no, Anakin is calm about it, but there's no way he's not doing that.
Right.
Right. And there's no way that, you know, if Obi-Wan's going to say the council agrees that it should be checked out, but they think a squadron should go and you're too valuable and stay here. Like, yeah, whatever. Anakin was just like, no. Talk to the to the mechanical hand.
Yeah.
Talk to the mechno arm.
And again, another insight into the relationship of the Jedi at large, the Jedi in general, with the clones, you know, and we always talk about Anakin of all people. You know, it makes sense, having a little more attachment. Cody and Obi-Wan have a connection. It's definitely, you know, you love Obi-Wan, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's also a general and he's dutiful and they want to, yeah, we'll send a squad of those replaceable clones.
Yeah.
You know, reading some subtext here, not saying it's directly coming from Obi-Wan, but yeah.
Yeah. But Obi-Wan goes along with the council for the most part. He only rarely, when he tries to rescue Sidine, that's one of the few times where he's just like, nope, I'm going. So moving on, we get to Gakko Minor. We get to see the Poltecs riding their dragons, which are called Kyradax. The cool chase, Crosshair riding the Kyradax, trailing behind the Kyradax and onto the village scene. That whole section we'd already talked about a little bit, but did anything else really grab you in that area?
It just, you know, it was a fun sequence for me. I sometimes... You know, I sometimes will say, I don't know, sometimes the Clone Wars, when they get these far off worlds or something like that, sometimes I do that thing where I'm like, I don't know, is this really in the Star Wars universe?
Yeah.
Is this really it? And I'll tell you, there's been some stuff in the comics that I've been like, I don't know. Is there a giant egg that Poe went into? I don't know. But this one, so I started that.
Yeah.
When I was like, oh, it's not just a creature. It's something that's being ridden. I was like, I don't know. Then I just turned my mind off, and I just really enjoyed the entire sequence. And again, I said, I love that they were just like, we didn't want you here, so we took your leader. I love their design, which also goes into that weird droid design.
Yes, yes.
Later. So I just like this sequence, and it was one of those times where I just kind of was like, sit back and enjoy this wild, weird, as you described it, fantasy Star Wars world.
Yeah, so great. The creepy, colorful fog, it's fantasy. It's Dragon Riders, Crosshair and Tech working together. If Tech just knows, Crosshair needs my shoulder right now to fire this.
Yeah, oh, so I love that. Yeah,
moment of just like silent working together. Yeah. Everything with Anakin's demeanor. And yeah, the design of the Poltecs was very cool. And that vocal design, I think, was just, it felt very original trilogy.
Totally.
Because the Clone Wars did, and the prequels in general, did lean more toward aliens just have different weird Earth accents sometimes.
Yeah.
Whereas original trilogy had grown up with hearing so much Hatice, or what the hell is Nine Num saying? What are the Ewoks saying? Like, for the most part, a lot of aliens did not speak any version of basic that we heard.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, maybe Akbar, so I think there was a power in just hearing that, like, oh, cool, they have a really different language.
I totally agree. Going to Solo, I no disrespect to Linda Hunt, I still want Lady Proxima to have subtitles, and, you know, I just... There's something about it. It works when it's that case.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, really cool. Moving along then. Wat Tambor. Mm. So it just delicious to spend more time with Wat Tambor. We both love that weirdo. I want to talk about his specific line, but you said that you had some feelings on Wat Tambor.
Yeah. Just like, I like seeing this stuff. He was one of those early punchlines in both good and bad ways. To be not even how you looked at the prequels at the time compared to now, but just like, it's so Star Warsy.
Yeah.
And we didn't give it credit. Some of us didn't get enough credit at the time for being Star Warsy. And especially even Attack of the Clones, where Lucas is doing 1950s stuff.
Yeah.
That's totally 50s design. So I just like seeing him, forget even what he's saying or what he's doing. I just like seeing him at the forefront. I just like when some of these separatists get their time in the sun.
Yeah.
Or the moons.
Get their time in the spotlight.
So on that level, I just enjoyed it there. Then we can go into what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love him as a character design. I love his voice. I love the name Techno Union. I love that he does. You're right. He does look like a little bit more like a 1950s space alien. Mm. I like that metal on his face. Makes it look like he was like a baking tin and then a green muffin. got baked up, and his head is the little muffin top with eyes.
Can't imagine they presented George with that design. So it's like a muffin tin. Is it like a green muffin? Yes, George, it is. I like it. Okay.
Does he pay for battle droids?
He does. So Wat Tambor seems to imply that the reason that they have Echo, this prisoner of war, you get the sense that an actual like violation of, you know, the rules of this combat, as much as there is between the Republic and the Separatists, that's being violated. But he feels safe because he says the Techno Union has corporate neutrality on the planet. That hit me, having just rewatched a lot of the Clone Wars political episodes that really kind of dug into, how do the Separatists work? How does Palpatine's scheming on the Republic side cause him to get more and more power over various institutions? How are they, you know, kind of breaking the Republic financially? So everybody's in a hard time. So looks to a big strong man like Palpatine going, hey, you haven't been eating? You haven't had much power? Well, we're the Empire now, and we're going to provide for you. Like, all that great political story. So this one really had a punch to me of that idea of Wat Tambor clearly a Separatist. You know, Obi-Wan saw him at the meeting in Attack of the Clones on Geonosis. So like they have to know on some point, but he and the Techno Union are still managing to be like, you know, but there's in our war where we're slaughtering one another, there's some things that we can't touch, like corporations on this planet.
Can't touch.
You can't touch it, you know, and I just sense George Lucas's anger at institutions to have like, this is a planet where this corporation that's clearly involved in nefarious things cannot be touched unless a brave band of rogue Republic soldiers and Jedi who are not supposed to be there are going to be like, screw your rules, Republic, we're going in.
I just pictured a smile on George, no matter when this line was written, back in the day when the episode was originally intended or if it was anything new now. George smiling. You know, it's almost like George was like, Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order was George leaving the Director's Guild.
It really was. Like, you accused me of a crime, you wanted to punish Irvin Kershner for where the directing credit was. I'm leaving.
But that's it. All, you know, what you're explaining, how this, the realistic nature of this war, the banks, trade, you're a great example. All the time, I go back to one of the first things we ever talked about, where you were like, "It's like Amazon having an army is the trade federation." It's like, "Oh yeah," when you stop and think about that, and what do you always say? Amazon's blocking Delaware. Like, Naboo, Delaware, we can't. So it all really tracks. It all really works, and it's all part of this great conversation about what the actual war was, how this democracy died, fuel for that fire.
Yeah. I mean, without getting into any depth in real world politics, I feel like for a lot of people, just hearing the phrase, you can't do anything because of corporate neutrality. I think across a wide swath of political spectrums, it just kind of makes one's blood boil a little bit, right? Because it speaks to some large institution
100%.
Getting away with things that individuals certainly can't.
100%. That should raise your little antennas if you're watching this episode. And if you don't think Star Wars has anything to do with politics.
Yeah.
But it all works. The Separatists, just to Palpatine's plan and Dooku's plan, that's why it's working.
You know? Yeah.
Every wing is represented.
Yeah. Tying everything up in these sort of hypocrisies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Moving on to both something less complex and more complex, those weirdo freak droids, the D-Wing droids, who it appears are going to continue to feature in this arc. How did you feel about those beautiful weirdos?
Loved them. And I'm not even sure why. Maybe it's because I've been playing a lot of Battlefront again, and I'm like, I'd love to see that. The blasters, the way they, you know, they resemble the Poltex. Why would you do that? You know, are they trying something new? Is this a new version that never got out to the galaxy at large? Just wonderful, weird, sort of not random, but random Star Wars fun.
Yeah.
I just like it.
It's just fun when you're in an era that is visually as well defined as the Clone Wars era is.
Yeah.
Into the seventh season of this show, that you still just see this weird design. That's a variation of something we first saw in 1999 and go, damn, look at those weirdos.
Look at those weirdos. Like, I wanted a figure. I wanted the old classic Phantom Menace era, you know, 3 3/4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just I just imagined the little plastic in my hand.
Oh, yeah. Weird, yeah. And I read a little bit on Wikipedia when I was researching them. I think, you know, we're going to see more about them. But for people who have not studied the animatics, I don't want to say anything more about that. There's something about them that, you know, the Techno Union experimenting with different droid designs, they looked so tortured. They like reminded me of like kind of almost characters or creatures you'd see in John Carpenter or horror of like, it doesn't even look like a comfortable way to be. They look like abominations.
The word was, I'm not telling abominations, droidinations, abominations. Yeah. Painful is a good way to describe it too. Like not natural, even for droids.
Yeah. Like, is that going to be functional for anything other than getting shot?
Like the other regular battle droids look at it and be like, oh, poor guys. Oh, poor guys.
How does that even work? All right. Getting toward the end of the episode, Echo is freed.
Yeah.
How did you feel? You said that this actual part was one of the things that resonated with you emotionally the most.
I just, first of all, it's done so well. I mean, the skin, the is that ice or mold? I don't know.
Yeah.
The discolorization, the plugged in, the eyes. I focus on the eyes. The legs.
The twitching movement. Like the,
the legs being at least from the knee down cybernetic parts there, from what I gathered. Yeah, I just like it because it this is kind of a big moment for Rex, for Echo, for us as fans of the Clone Troopers. But this is really putting the humanity or the clonanity, but humanity of war, in front of us, of the dark side, but also the beauty that could be found in that. You mentioned the line of, you know, you came for me, or, you know, similar, not like Chewie in Rise of Skywalker, like, I'm not just some piece that can be tossed aside. And the fact that he had some, you know, I wouldn't say he's all completely there, you know, and is ready to go drinking, but like almost like Han and Carbonite, where like you have some sort of awareness of what's going on, some sort of connection to your past, like that's horrible. But to see Rex, basically, like I said, he's shed his helmet in this scene again too. Mm-hmm. And he is not a weapon of war. He's not a nameless number. They have names, they have personality, and this leads to probably bigger realizations and enlightenment about the clones' relationship to the Jedi, the Republic, and the war itself. All in this very kind of frightening, in a way.
Absolutely.
It's a frightening image.
It's a horror scene.
I'm thinking if I'm watching this with my kid, I might be. I don't have a kid, by the way, folks. Unless you count Chihuahuas.
A secret romance in the office led to Ken's mystery child. Revealed today.
Revealed today. But like that's a pretty frightening image. That's some imagery, man. So, but it's very raw. And I just, especially for Rex, like to see it all intersect into the scene. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I think you're really hitting a lot of the great notes about what I loved about it. I really liked the emotion, but I also kind of like the clarity where we see him. He's got that looks like rapid eye movement, so it suggests that this is a brain working on almost a subconscious level being stolen from.
Right.
And then I like that clarity of the first thing he's saying is the last thing he said of,
right,
that shuttle can get us out. It'll get us out of the Citadel, and really makes it clear of like he did not consciously choose to do this. Mm-hmm. He was made to do this.
Yeah.
And then becomes aware that he's in this horrible place and is so touched that Rex came for him.
Yeah.
You know, so to go from that gamut of this is not his choice.
Yeah.
The horror of his situation and the relief, the love.
Yeah.
That
definitely.
He's not just a piece of meat to be rejected, to be used and thrown away.
And like if you're Rex, I'm just pulling this out. If you're Rex and you heard that, the council said we'll send a squad. Yeah, the council wanted to know more facts on what was going on.
Yeah,
there.
Just go and go recon, but don't get involved.
And, you know, here it is, this person, this being, this living creature, this living living clone in front of you, like, come on, Ki-Adi Mundi. We're picking on Ki-Adi Mundi this episode. He hasn't said anything. But, you know, come on, Plo Koon, Ki-Adi Mundi. Come down and stare at this.
Yeah.
And tell me tell me this isn't wrong. You know, Rex has got to be kind of mad.
That's the other thing that I really liked about it, because we absolutely can and should be critical of the Jedi and the Republic. Yeah. It's the part of this era of storytelling. Hmm. But to me, this is one of those examples of the Jedi are heroes who lost their way.
Yeah.
And the other side is doing awful, awful things. And everything in this scene reminds us of that, that Wat Tambor has a prisoner of war hidden on a planet where he thinks he's untouchable because of laws and money. And then just the visual language of that room. It's like aesthetically cool. I love the Art Deco design, but with like the lightning coming down the pillars, that specific design is invoking Frankenstein. It's invoking Metropolis. Stories that are formative to somebody like Lucas, and stories that are about questioning at what level can you mess with the idea of humanity, and then it's not humanity anymore.
Right.
It's getting to the heart of sort of the Lucas theme of mechanization. Mm. So then when that, to me, is part of the reason it is so successful as a horror moment, is not just the natural feeling of like of our own horror at Echo's situation and you know, losing body parts, but just that cultural language of your humanity being robbed from you. I think that's what really, really hit me of this isn't just a war tactic.
Yeah.
This is truly deeply robbing and violating someone's humanity.
Yeah.
And it works, it is a horror moment on so many levels, but it really hits to me that deeper core of Star Wars, of everybody is of value and everybody's humanity should be respected.
But don't look behind the door with the Techno Union.
Yeah.
Don't look behind there.
Yeah.
We're working on some projects.
Corporate neutrality related projects. So much love, and got me really pumped for the next episode what I assume will be the escape from Skako Minor. But yes, I know many people watching are like, I know exactly what it is. So moving on as we wrap up, any other character moments, planets that we haven't touched on that you really wanted to be sure to touch on?
No, I think we did get to a lot of there. I have been enjoying already just two episodes. We're seeing a lot of different things with the Clone Wars, new entries in Wikipedia.
Yeah, and new entries in Wikipedia,
It's a gift late in the game.
And speaking of new entries, we like to do our action figure check. You already mentioned your action figure, but if you could have a figure of any character, who do you want? Would it be the droid abominations?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a troop collector. Even when I was collecting figures, you know, I don't build my armies, but just to have the weird, like, I could feel them moving the arms around in my hands, you know, just really like, what is them in a weird, I'll take a D-Wing droid.
Yeah. D-Wing droid would be great. The only other thing I thought of is, you know, back in the Power of the Force days, they had those cinema scenes.
Yes.
That was usually three figures. My cinema scene would be four figures. I would love a cinema scene of Anakin and a hologram Padme action figure talking. And then Rex outside with Obi-Wan approaching.
Sacred tryst, cinema scene.
Yes, the secret call, forbidden call, cinema scene in stores now.
Yeah.
Act out Obi-Wan's suspicion.
Yeah,
every day.
I'll take that.
Yeah, that would be great. All right, so that is our look at the Clone Wars episode, A Distant Echo. Lots of great just fantasy design, action, humor, but some great stuff that ties into the big picture story of the Clone Wars Skywalker Saga era, and some stuff that really dives deep into big Star Wars thematics. Ken, to end our episode, what should the moral of this podcast episode be?
I think the moral lesson of this episode should be, when traveling down the corridors of life, bring good friends with you.
That's actually a good one. I'm going to think about that the next time I'm in a corridor.
Don't go into corridors alone.
Don't go into corridors alone. Bring your secret office romance partner with you. That's some wisdom from us. Until next time, this has been the Clone Wars Report.